Home Registry. Again, that's Killer of Sheep on Wednesday, October 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Here and There, audio postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI in Portland.
Here and There, audio postcards from Earth is an all-ages and ability-inclusive event featuring nature sounds and field recordings in immersive surround sound from scientists and artists local and abroad from some of the world's most remote locations.
Listen to these places while sitting under the shifting stars from that time and place in nature's memory. Again, that's Here and There, audio postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue, Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. Stay tuned next for The Politics of Living.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Politics of Living. I'm your host, Vicki Mizzone. This program takes a look at the politics and all that we experience in life. Today's show is about focusing on the midterm elections and featuring stories of women with no prior political experience who decided to get involved. On the She-Ra Solution, Kristen Thiel features an accountant in Rwanda who challenged a government that targeted her father's business. But first, we start with two different conversations I had with local groups about their plans for the midterm elections. One group, Basic Rights Oregon, is focusing specifically on several ballot measures, including Measure 105 here in Oregon. My first interview, however, is with two women from the Indivisible Movement, Smitha Chidaga from Indivisible Oregon and Amber Tachi from Indivisible Clackamas. They'll be talking about how Indivisible got started, what compelled them to join, and goals for the political future. Here's Smitha Chidaga and Amber Tachi. So my guests today here on The Politics of Living are Smitha Chidaga from Indivisible Oregon and Amber Tachi from Indivisible Clackamas. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we're going to start out with talking about how each one of you got involved with your particular Indivisible chapters. And Amber, you can go first.
Thank you. Well, I started with Indivisible Clackamas after the Indivisible Guide was written. So that was basically the beginning of Indivisible. It was written by some former congressional staffers who were around during the Obama administration. They witnessed the Tea Party and how effective the tactics of the Tea Party were at stopping legislation from going through, basically stopping everything in Congress. And they wrote down these tactics for people after the 2016 election. They saw a lot of people who were just kind of floundering, kind of devastated. I felt the same way after the election, and I didn't know what to do. And they saw a lot of people contacting members of Congress that weren't their own, signing just a ton of online petitions, and not knowing what to do. So they wrote this guide to help people focus. Their tactics were basically stay local, stay vocal, hold your members of Congress accountable, make sure that you focus on your own members of Congress. You're not calling everybody. Members of Congress really care about getting elected, so they care if their constituents are talking to them. So anyway, the Indivisible Guide was written, and I read it, and I thought, wow, this is so grounding, thank goodness. I didn't know what to do either, and I forgot about it. So fast forward about 3 weeks, a friend of mine invited me to a meeting, and she said, oh, it's an Indivisible meeting. I had forgotten what that was. And I went to this meeting. It was up in Portland, North Portland. It was a Portland Indivisible meeting, which is slightly different than my group and Smitha's group. And there were about 40 people there in this, crammed into this little coffee shop, tons of energy. People really wanted to do something. So I went there. They told me, well, you know, you're District 5, which is represented by Kurt Schrader. We were up in District 3, which is Blumenauer. So they said, you need to find something local. Like, that is what Indivisible is about. So I looked around on the internet, and it just so happened that the next day, someone was starting a meeting in Clackamas County, so down in Oregon City. We went down there, and there were only six of us. It was a lot different. not quite as much energy. And we thought, okay, we have to get this done. So we started devising a plan, deciding how we were going to function as a group. And soon after the inauguration, we had our first open meeting. Again, there were only six of us. We were trying to figure ourselves out. And about 120 people showed up to that first meeting. So we thought, wow, we need to harness this energy. There are people in Clackamas County who really want to fight for progressive values. So let's make this happen. So we got ourselves really organized. We have been refining our mission. I'll just state our mission for you. So the Indivisible Clackamas mission is to resist the Trump agenda by engaging constituents with their members of Congress and by promoting fair, tolerant, inclusive values. So that's what we've been trying to do through a number of systems that we've created.
And Smitha, how did you get involved with Indivisible Oregon?
So very similar to what Amber was saying is I found the Indivisible Guide as well. I wasn't sure what to do after the 2016 election, but I had a little bit of a harder time finding meetings because I wasn't yet on Facebook. I had resisted it. I needed to do something. So I found out through a friend that there was a group called Indivisible Oregon that were going to Senate offices. And so I went to one meeting and I listened. And then I went to another meeting and I didn't really have an intention of speaking, but I'm a physician and I was terrified that the ACA was going to get repealed and what that would mean for my patients, because the ACA has revolutionized the way that I take care of patients. And so at the second meeting, which is called Resist Trump Tuesday, I felt compelled to speak. And I asked to say something to the Senate staffers. And this message just came pouring out of me about how we had to save the ACA and we couldn't go backwards and healthcare is a human right. And after that, someone came up to me and said, "Hey, do you want to help with Indivisible Oregon?" And I was like, "Well, I've never done anything like that before, but you know what? I am game." And so I joined Facebook because you have to resist these days. And I became part of Indivisible Oregon, which similarly started in New Year's Day of 2017. There were six people in a house. Quite a few of them had been part of the gun violence prevention movement. So they saw those organizing skills, skill set mirrored in the Indivisible Guide. And the first Tuesday after the election, they held their first Resist Trump Tuesday. And we've had one almost every Tuesday since then.
On Resist Trump Tuesday, you do what?
So Resist Trump Tuesday is taken directly from the guide. So Indivisible Oregon, we work on a federal level to defend democracy. And we take the guide very seriously and we adhere to it very closely. So we engage our federal members of Congress through calls to action by going to town halls and then by doing visits at their offices. So Resist Trump Tuesday are visits at Senate offices. We speak with the senator staff. We have a standing meeting. We go every Tuesday to one office or the other. Senator Wyden's office is at 911 Northeast 11th Avenue. We meet in the courtyard. Senator Merkley's office is by the Trade Center in downtown Portland at 121 Southwest Salmon. And we meet in the courtyard at 11:30. We talk a little bit about what we're going to ask. So we make a very specific ask. So if you're calling your member of Congress on any elected representative, you need to have a very concrete ask. Obviously, they want to hear about how you're feeling, but you want to let them know what your course of action is. And it needs to be very concrete so that the staffer or the member of Congress to who you're speaking can go away and take action. So we go every Tuesday at noon, we meet with the staffer from the office and we say, we would like Senator Merkley or Senator Wyden to do X. And we have seen this really work. In combination with our five daily calls to action, I'm the policy team lead. So on our website, indivisibleor.org, you can find scripts to call your members of Congress every day. And Amber has an alert that goes out in an email form as well to call. And so in concert, we have seen our senators take action to defend against the Trump agenda, to push progressive values. And it has been an amazing tool to get things done on a federal level.
Can you give me an example of a recent concrete ask and how that played out?
Yes. So for instance, right now we're dealing with the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. So Brett Kavanaugh is being nominated to Supreme Court. His policy views are antithetical to most of the values which we hold dear in terms of health care, in terms of choice, in terms of birth control, voting rights, civil rights. So we have been going probably for the last month, every week we have been asking our senators to take action on this. And so, we ask them, will you take our stories to Congress. And they have said, yes, collect all stories. So if anyone has a story of how your life will change if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed to the Supreme Court, send it to policy@indivisibleor.org. And our senator staff have asked us to collect those. So that's an action we asked, and they responded. In addition, I have seen videos of Senator Wyden talking to activists saying how he and Senator Merkley worked together to stop the Ryan Bounds nomination. That was another call to action that we had. We called and we said, Ryan Bounds has been nominated to the circuit court out of Oregon. We want you to stop it. He and Jeff Merkley went and worked and worked and worked, and they actually stopped that nomination. And they said that they hear those calls. Senator Merkley on his Twitter has cited 14 to 1, there are calls against Brett Kavanaugh. We have done calls to action at least 2 to 3 times a week. So that's just a handful of things that we have seen on one simple topic, which is the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. And imagine that we cover topics from things that are going on at the border, things that are going on with spending bills. We were huge with the ACA. And this comes up a lot, at least in Oregon, if you're progressive. Why should I call my representative if they agree with me? First of all, calls and showing up are a snap poll. You know, as Amber said, they want to hear from their constituents. The other people are calling. You need to make sure your voice gets heard. Second, there's a difference between voting the way that you want someone to vote and going out there and working for the position that you want. So if you don't call, your representative might take the vote that you want, but they won't go out there and actively work for that position. All of these calls give political coverage to go out there and do bold things. You know, I have no doubt that Senator Merkley might not have been emboldened to go down to the border to shed the light on the human rights crisis that we have with family detention and separation of children if we were not calling him, asking him to do something about that. He knows that we have his back at home to provide him the latitude to go out there and do things. He did investigative reporting that showed that money has been taken from FEMA to give to DHS to do deportations. Once again, we provide him with that political cover to go out and do investigations like that. And Senator Merkley has taken it one step forward. He has endorsed 7 candidates who are progressive around the nation to help this progressive agenda. So by calling and stating your case on a certain issue, it's your right as a constituent. And if your member of Congress doesn't agree with you, they should definitely hear from you. But if they do agree with you, you embolden them to go out there and do more. And we have definitely seen that time and time again on the senatorial level.
And you said earlier that prior to this, you had no real political experience or
yeah.
political activism experience. And Amber, that's the same for you?
Yes.
Would you, either one of you, like to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, we all kind of felt the call after the 2016 election. So a lot of us are, I kind of describe myself as a bit of a reluctant activist in my life. I don't really like to make people annoyed at me. And sometimes being an activist, you have to be a little bit pushy. But we're finding too that there's so many ways to participate and there's so many things you can do. You don't have to have a lot of experience. You just have to show up. You just have to show up.
And that's what I found. I had absolutely no background in this. I thought my service to my community was being a physician and taking care of my patients, and I still value that highly. But being part of this, I realized you need to, as Amber said, show up and do something. If you see something needs to be done, one of my fellow organizers and co-host on my podcast says, just go out there and help. And so we've been lucky in Indivisible Oregon. Our founding members, as I mentioned earlier, part of the gun violence prevention movement, part of Moms Demand Action. And so they really have these skills that they are teaching all of us. But most of the organizers of Indivisible Oregon didn't have a background in doing this, and we are just showing up and we're learning on the go. So, you know, we learned how to make calls to members of Congress, how to do visits. We've now learned what needs to be done in a midterm to make progress. And we're just working with each other and for each other. And more importantly, I think we're working for a cause in which we all believe. We really believe in these progressive values. We believe in standing up for our democracy. We really believe that we're saving our country in doing this, and we would encourage anyone out there who feels the same, just come and take a look. We will provide you with all the tools that you need, and we will help you with whatever, but there's all sorts of things to do. You don't have to always talk to people. We need people to do data entry. We need people to make copies. We need, you know, snacks. There are so many things that can be done that all work to help defend our democracy.
And I think the key is to organize. So I found the power, and a lot of people in our group found the power of being with people who are like-minded, who you know are with you, and then figuring it out together. Because a lot of us felt kind of isolated and lost after the election, and just get with a group, figure out a plan, and make it happen. And right now, there's a lot of groups that are already doing that, like Indivisible Clackamas, Indivisible Oregon. There's a lot of other Indivisible groups. Part of the magic of the movement is that it was very, very grassroots. So there's over 5,800 Indivisible groups across the country now. There's at least two in every congressional district. And they all developed in different ways. And we're all kind of growing together a little bit now and working more together. But we're all doing slightly different things. So you can find your niche.
I mean, just here in the metro area, there are so many groups. I mean, Indivisible Clackamas is there. There's Indivisible Oregon. One of our organizers with Indivisible Oregon actually leads another group called One Small Thing PDX, which works on local elections. And they have monthly meetings with great speakers who come in and give actionable items. And so you can find something to meet, you know, on what you want to work, on whatever your schedule is. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be Indivisible. There are so many advocacy groups that have been here for decades that have great experience in doing all of this organizing. So if there's a value about which you particularly care, whether it's voting rights or civil rights, you know, the NAACP is very active. If you care about voting rights, the Bus Project is there. As Amber said, just try to take action. What I tell people when they're starting is, you know, my kind of recipe for just the beginning of activism, if you can call your members of Congress once or twice a week, if you can spare $5 a month to donate to a candidate in which you believe, and then take maybe one additional action, whether it's to write 5 postcards or to go to a meeting, if you can do those 3 things, that is huge. That is way beyond what other average citizens are doing. And it takes only a small percentage of the population to make a movement and to change the country. It's in single digits what it takes to actually make change in this country. So if you feel that urge, come and join us, or come and join the organization that's closest to you. You can make a difference in saving your democracy.
I want to go back a little bit to when you both got involved with your respective groups. What were the goals that were set at that time besides, I'm obviously resist the Trump agenda, but was there talk about the midterms even early on? And Amber, I think I'll ask you first.
Sure. We started out, I think, not even thinking about the midterms, just kind of thinking about how to make it to the midterms as a group and politically and as a country. We were focused at the beginning on the principles of the Indivisible Guide, which was focus on your 3 members of Congress. That's your 2 senators and your 1 House representative. And we were trying to do similar things to what Indivisible Oregon was doing. So we do 1 visit to Kurt Schrader's office, Representative Kurt Schrader, once per month. We send out calls to action every week. So we try to make sure that daily there's something to call your member of Congress about. And we attend town halls, and we try to make sure that those are well attended, that people have good questions to ask, and they know what to do. Since then, we've changed our vision a little bit for the midterms. We're focusing on local elections. A lot of the groups are focusing more nationally. And again, Indivisible as an organization now, because it now is an organization, and it was not at the beginning, it was just a document. But it's an organization, and they're really focusing on midterm elections at the federal level. So because our group kind of went in a different direction, it's all grassroots, we decided local was the way to go. We're focusing on local elections in Clackamas County. It's not uncommon in Clackamas County for elections to be won by 1,000 votes either way. So there are 4 for the Oregon State Legislature that are really key right now that we're trying to flip seats. The Oregon State Legislature is just 1 House seat away and 1 Senate seat away from a supermajority of progressives. So it's a pretty important election.
Yeah, so I think similarly, you know, in the beginning we were all really trying to find our footing. So Indivisible Oregon, definitely we focus on a federal level. Our key visits are to our senator's office. So we kind of came up with that fairly quickly, that we're defending democracy on a federal level. We are going to be focusing on Senate's visits, but we do have calls to action for senators and representative staff. And I mean, honestly, that took a decent part, you know, of the beginning of this Trump administration. And in terms of prepping for midterms, we had a huge role in Measure 101, in learning how to canvass for that, phone bank for that, text bank for that. And that was sort of the dry run for the midterms. And then each group kind of has to decide, you know, what they're going to do for the midterms. And as Amber said, it is very dependent on the group. So you can find any group that will support any candidate. We decided to stay federal. We realized that our laser focus in organization on a narrow scope makes us highly effective. So focusing on senators and asking them specific asks, you know, focusing on these calls to action. And so we made the decision to focus on a federal level as far as the midterms go. And so when we talk about the candidates, we can talk very specifically about what we're doing. But I will say probably in the beginning, midterms was out there. But in the beginning, it was very much, you know, defending our democracy. And right now we are toggling. We have different teams focusing on the defending our democracy and different teams focusing on the midterm so we can have all of our mission accomplished.
I would like to say, too, that Indivisible Oregon has been sort of a hub for other Indivisible groups in a way. So a lot of us have said, you know, they're doing great work with the senator, so we're going to just piggyback on what they're doing. We go up to Resist Trump Tuesdays or send people up there. And then we decided to focus more on Representative Kurt Schrader, who there were not as many groups in District 5. And he's also kind of a middle-of-the-road progressive, not super progressive. And we've had a cordial relationship there with the staffers. I wouldn't say enthusiastic reception. But that's one of the reasons we decided to focus that way, too. So we're all kind of complementing each other, these groups, and trying to focus where it is needed.
Let's talk about the candidates and what you're doing specifically for midterms, and then what you hope to see in November.
Sure. So we are focusing, like I said, locally. We know that we can make a big difference, and this is one of the reasons we started focusing locally. You can get to know candidates. They're your neighbors. They're, you know, local store owners. You can speak with them. They're very accessible. And like I said, elections can be won by under 1,000 votes. One of the districts that we're working for in 2010, a Republican won that seat by just 227 votes. So we know that we can make a big difference just by pushing. We're focusing on a few candidates in the area. So I just wanted to say who they are and let you know that these are important elections at the state level. We're helping Rachel Prusak. She's running for HD 37, which is in West Lynn and Tualatin. That's House District 37. Chrissy Wrights is running for Senate District 26, which is Damascus, Sandy, Hood River, Corbett, Cascade Locks. Anna Williams is running for House District 52, which is Sandy, Hood River, Cascade Locks, Estacada. Charles Gallia is running for Senate District 20, which is Oregon City. And a lot of our activities have been centered out of Oregon City. Can be Beaver Creek and Estacada. Janelle Bynum, she's currently holding House District 51, but she's had a bit of a fight and we want to support her. That's Portland, Happy Valley, Sunnyside, Damascus. Mark Meek is in House District 40 in Oregon City. And Pamela White, running for the Clackamas County Clerk, which is a position I learned a lot more about. Not a lot of people know about, but it's a pretty important position that we need her to win.
And Smitha, what do you hope to see happen in November, and what is the current goal for the midterms?
So our focus in Indivisible Oregon is on the federal level. And so we are working on two races. One is in Oregon. So we decided that we wanted to defeat Trump-enabling candidates. So it's not particularly about party, you know, Republican, Democrat, Independent. It's about getting out people who are enabling Trump and not holding him accountable. And in Oregon, we have one representative, Greg Walden. He represents OR2. He was the architect of the ACA repeal, and he actually was also part of the reason why the CHIP reauthorization process got politicized. And so we have looked at that seat as a way to defeat the Trump agenda. And so we are supporting Jamie McLeod Skinner. She's an amazing congressional candidate out of OR2. As one of our organizers said, it's almost as if she is genetically engineered to win in OR2. She has a great background in civil engineering and worked in Bosnia to resurrect after the war there. She has a law degree in water rights and Native American rights. And she is really about listening to her constituents and putting up a mirror and understanding what they need and being there. The current representative is not there. He holds fundraisers outside of the state, outside of his district, and he is just not listening to his district. So we're supporting Jamie McLeod Skinner. The other candidate we're supporting is not actually in Oregon, but in Washington. And so we've partnered with, we work with Swing Left. So Swing Left is another group that started after the election. There's so many great resources. And so one of the founders basically was like, you know, I live in a district that's pretty progressive, but I'd really like to help somebody that's not progressive. What's my closest, quote, swing district? And there was no mechanism to find out. So once again, if you see something that needs help, just do it. They formed this group. And so at least in the Portland metro area, the closest geographic swing district that is being supported by this campaign is Washington 3. And so there is Jamie Herrera Butler. So she votes 91% of the time with Donald Trump. Greg Walden, as a side note, votes 98.9% of the time with Donald Trump. And so we are looking to defeat her. And once again, have an amazing candidate in Carolyn Long. She's a political science professor at Washington State University, teaching constitutional law and judicial process. She even has a course called Civility in Politics that she's turned into a community event that you can go to. And so she is working. She's actually a very moderate Democrat. And this is the key about being local. You know, candidates need to be able to win in their district. So I may not agree with everything or you know, we may not agree with everything that every candidate, but the candidate has to run for the district. And she's an amazing candidate for her district. She knows her district well. She's already gone to, I can't remember how many town halls she's had, but she's been most places twice, and she's really listening to the district. And once again, the incumbent has not had a town hall in hundreds of days in that area. And so we're really hoping that we can defeat these Trump enabling representatives to have a House that will have majority of representatives who will caucus with the Democrats, because that gives us the ability to provide oversight. So in addition to voting for progressive policies, when you have the majority, you have the ability to investigate. And this Congress, this GOP-led Congress, has not done any oversight of this president. We have no investigations in what's happening at the border and the abuses at the border. We have no investigations into what happened in Puerto Rico and why 3,000 people died. We have no investigations over the ridiculous conflicts of interest and the amount of money that we're spending at Trump properties. And that's just to name a few things that are going on. We don't have Trump's taxes. What is going on? All of these kinds of oversight can happen if we can flip the Congress. And so that's why we're working so hard on these two races.
I was wondering, too, if I could clarify, listening to what Smitha was saying about party affiliation not mattering, and I wanted to put it out there, it's very important to a lot of our members that we are not party affiliated either. We are for progressive, tolerant, inclusive values. We would like to welcome all members of any party into our group. And sometimes I refer to one group as, oh, the Democrat, we need the Democrat to win. That often does reflect our values. But there are plenty of our members that are non-affiliated. There are plenty of our members that are independent. They are not interested in working for the Democratic Party. They are interested in working for a value set. And the candidates that we're supporting are going to work for those values too.
Well, thank you very much for both of you for coming today and for talking about your respective groups. Final thoughts and final information for folks to get involved.
Yes. So I definitely want to let people know how to get involved with Indivisible Oregon. So I would say on the defending your democracy aspect, please go to our website, indivisibleor.org. You can find the schedule for our Resist Trump Tuesday meetings. You can also find our scripts for calls to action. Please program your representatives' phone numbers into your phone and make calls at least a couple of times a week. In addition to that, if you'd like to take a step further, please get involved in the midterm action. There are so many places you can act, and we specifically at Indivisible Oregon, at indivisibleor.org/midterms, have a whole calendar of events. We have canvassing for Jamie McLeod Skinner at least twice a week. We have phone banks for Jamie McLeod Skinner every Thursday in Southeast at Tabor Space. We have canvassing for Carolyn Long every Sunday, and we have phone banks for Carolyn Long every Tuesday in Northeast Portland. We had prior, you know, just in the In the run-up to the midterm elections, we've already had 40 events to contact voters with 385 volunteer shifts, and we have over 50 events planned for the future. So we really welcome anyone who would like to help. And once again, it's not all on the front lines in terms of talking to people and calling, which we have tons of coaches to walk you through that, but we need people to do data entry and welcome and make copies and things like that. So once again, it's indivisibleor.org, and you can find all of our calls to actions, all of our events, and how to get involved in the midterms.
And for us, there's also a lot of ways to get involved. One of our strengths has been that we set up some systems, and I talked about that a little earlier, of just our regular actions that we do every month. And we made those successful because we can plug new ideas into these systems. It's a little more manageable for those of us on leadership. It's super easy for people to just show up. And again, just show up. Just come to one of our events or any event that you can see that might help resist the Trump agenda. We have every first and third Sunday, we have postcard parties. And these have been one of our most successful events because they're social. It's fun. The first and third Sunday from 12:30 to 2:30, we provide prompts for your members of Congress so you can write postcards to them if you didn't make your calls that week. And we also provide addresses and prompts to write postcards to voters. We do up and down ballot races across the country. We've been sending postcards to voters in Greg Walden's district. We've also been using ACLU postcards to get out the vote. So this is a really easy way to make a difference and also meet some like-minded people. Again, that's the first and third Sunday, 12:30 to 2:30. We also have our open planning meetings if you'd like to get more involved. Those are the fourth Thursday of the month. Those are a little smaller meeting, and we do some business items, but we'd love for new people to come in and give their input and get more involved in our group. It's 7 to 8:30 at the Oak Lodge Fire Station on the fourth Thursday of the month. We visit Representative Kurt Schrader's office the second Wednesday of the month. And that's, we meet at the Unitarian Church in Oregon City for planning at 3. We walk over to the office at 4. All of these are up on our Facebook page, of course, too. And then also for the local candidates, we're hosting some of our own Canvas events. We know a lot of people are nervous about canvassing. I was one of those people. And I have to tell you, I was nervous. I did it. And it was fine. It's actually kind of fun, and you feel so great afterwards. We just all have to get a little bit out of our comfort zone. Because if we're going to keep doing things the way we did it before the election, nothing is going to change. So come to one of our canvases. Right now, we have one planned for Charles Gallia on September 29th. We'll be meeting at 10 o'clock at his office in Oregon City. And again, that's up on Indivisible Clackamas Facebook page. And we go out in pairs. It's really fun and easy. You'll feel very supported. Again, I would say just block out 2 hours of your schedule, pick an event, and show up. I think that's the most important thing.
Yes, action is the antidote to despair. You always feel better after you take action.
Let's mention both Facebook pages.
Indivisible Oregon's Facebook page is at Indivisible Oregon, and then our website is indivisibleor.org.
If you'd like to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/indivisibleclackamas. And you can also email us at indivisibleclackamas@gmail.com. We'd love to add you to our mailing list. We send out our calls to action and events twice a week. We try to keep it down. We know your inbox is full. So go ahead and email us, indivisibleclackamas@gmail.com, and check out our Facebook page.
Amber Tachi and Smitha Chidaga from Indivisible Clackamas, Indivisible Oregon, respectively, thank you so much for talking about your work.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
That was Smitha Chidaga and Amber Tachi from Indivisible Clackamas. Postcard parties are held by Indivisible Clackamas twice every month. The next postcard party is October 7th from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at the new location, Midway Historic Public House at 1003 7th Street in Oregon City. If you'd like to find a local chapter of Indivisible, please visit www.indivisible.org. Next up on The Politics of Living, a conversation with Margo Martin, Development Director for Basic Rights Oregon, talking about the history of Basic Rights Oregon and the actions and goals for the midterm elections, including Oregon Ballot Measure 105. Here's Margo Martin. Welcome, Margo, to The Politics of Living.
Thank you, thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. And you are with Basic Rights Oregon. So Give us the short recap of the history of Basic Rights Oregon.
Sure. So Basic Rights Oregon, affectionately referred to as BRO, was founded in 1996, and it was really just a horrendous ballot measure landscape of extreme anti-LGBTQ measures. So really, BRO formed to be kind of this permanent blockage to every single one of these ballot measures that just kind of kept hitting the state over and over again, and they really did so for about the next 10 years. I would say that's really where we built our name recognition, really established our position in politics, and solidified our role as a champion for equality in the, you know, across the state. And so our success and namesake were really formed because of these super aggressive attacks on the LGBTQ community in the state that we just kept kind of striking down year after year. And so that's kind of the, right, like where we started. Over 30 ballot measure attacks. Our opposition only won twice. And the last was in 2004 when they successfully passed a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, which is Amendment 36. I just learned this as well, that Oregon was actually a victim of a national strategy where over 17 states went to the ballot in the same year to ban same-sex marriage because of a plan that Karl Rove developed to get conservative Christian voters to come out and vote for George Bush. So after that defeat, we really sort of re-engaged and decided that we were going to embark on a pretty intense 5-year culture shift towards racial and transgender justice. And also for the first time, we're really proactive in putting forth pro-LGBTQ measures instead of sort of only responding to hateful ones. So in 2007, we were able to pass the Oregon Equality Act, which is an all-inclusive, specifically trans-inclusive protective act, and have proceeded to pass bills in every session since, like the Safe Schools Act, a ban on conversion therapy. We also passed House Bill 2673 to become the first state to allow residents to select a non-binary option for their driver's licenses, making access to basic services easier for transgender Oregonians.
And your role with BRO?
I'm the development director.
As you know, midterms are right around the corner.
That they are.
What is BRO doing for the midterms?
So we've been part of a coalition called One Oregon for quite some time now, and that is a coalition of groups across the state that are really coming together to stand up for our immigrant communities. In the midterms, there's a ballot measure, it's Measure 105, brought forth by Oregonians for Immigration Reform, OFER, we affectionately refer to them as, and their name sounds pretty, right? Like, oh, immigration reform, but they're actually a hate group, have been described and categorized by the Southern Poverty Law Center. They are funded by white nationalists and are getting a lot of money from across the country, from hate groups across the country, to fuel this measure. Basically, this measure would repeal Oregon's status as a sanctuary state, which has been in effect for 31 years. And when it was passed, it had incredible bipartisan support. They aim to take Oregon back to a state that is profiling, right? That is fueled by hate, that is not welcoming and loving and affirming of all folks that are here. And so we are really working hard on making sure that folks vote no on Measure 105. We don't want to go back in time, right? We acknowledge and recognize the immigrants in our community and the positive impact that they have on our state. And also see the intersections that, you know, of course, there are immigrants who are part of the LGBTQ community and vice versa, and really are just working on making sure that our state is as inclusive and accepting of all folks, right? And that's the Oregon that we all love and the Oregon that we're used to. And this measure really threatens to kind of strip away what I've seen this state really be proud of.
And what was the other thing that BRO's working on for the midterms?
So we're definitely in support of Kate Brown's run for office. She's done incredible work for our community and a lot of marginalized folks across the state. Newt Bueller has been, you know, it's become pretty public that he has been backed by some hate groups. We don't want, you know, our state to sort of be given over to folks that aren't looking out for the best interest of everybody. So we're definitely taking, creating a lot of space to really support her campaign as well. There's another vote, another ballot measure coming up, Measure 106, which seeks to strip away the rights of folks that are on the Oregon Health Plan to make decisions about accessing abortion care. That also covers state employees, so teachers, firefighters. That care would no longer be covered under the Oregon Health Plan. And Oregon is arguably the most pro-choice state in the country. So we have yet another ballot measure that really just kind of goes against what I would consider the ideals of our state. So we're working pretty actively on those as well.
How can people get on board with what Bro's doing, and do you have any events coming up?
All right, so the best thing to do is to go to orunited.org and sign up to volunteer. That's Oregonians United Against Profiling, making sure that you come out and vote. I know that it feels like every election has been like, this is the most important election, but I think we all saw what happened last time. So this truly is the most important election. Making sure that you spread the news to your, you know, to your friends and neighbors that these really dangerous ballot measures are up for consideration in a state that sort of prides itself, right, on not letting hate from the outside sort of attack folks. And then we are also continuing to sort of resist and try to do so with as much joy and love for ourselves and one another as possible. And so we're really going to be celebrating kind of that resistance coming up on October 13th. We have our largest annual fundraiser, Ignite, which is a combination of a dinner and then this really great dance party afterwards. And we're kind of going with a, you know, a love, resist, sparkle theme. So I think it's good to kind of dance it out sometimes and be around folks like you, that look like you and love like you, and you know, kind of take a moment to breathe and really recoup, knowing that this November is going to be a fight.
And there's an auction at Ignite too, isn't there?
There is. There's a live auction. There's a silent auction. There's tons of fun stuff. We have DJs. You know, there's a dance party afterwards. The governor will be joining us at Ignite, yeah, for a little bit of it. So we're really excited.
And is there a theme this year?
Yeah. So the theme is sparkle, right? From what I understand, there used to be some costume, over-the-top kind of costumes in the past that folks really liked, but it's feeling like we're sort of shifting to, I believe last year was sort of black and white, and then this year is, you know, come covered in glitter or not, right? It's your choice, but we're really trying to kind of focus on the joy of that moment and that event.
And if folks want to go to Ignite, how do they do that?
You can find all the information at our website, which is basicrights.org.
What do you want to see happen in November?
Do I want to see happen in November? I want to see those of us who have felt like the marginalization of our lives that's really been perpetuated since 2016. I want us to know that we have the power and the ability to fight back. I want to see November bring all of us together to stand up, and not just in the state, right, but across the country. I want to see these seats flipped. I want to see majorities of folks that are out there trying to represent all of us. I would like white nationalists to no longer be empowered to just think that they can sort of streak around town and do and say whatever they want to and spew this hate that we've worked so hard and for so long to get away from. So I have a lot of hope for November because I think that's all we can do right now.
Would you like to add anything else?
We also, you know, we have another really cool event coming up on National Coming Out Day, which is October 11th. It's the Coming Out Monologues. I believe it's the fourth annual year for that. And it's a really great sort of opportunity to hear from a variety of folks within our community on their coming out experiences, and can again kind of be this reminder of where we came from, you know, making sure that we're keeping this positive trajectory going and kind of fueling that fight, right? And kind of filling our coffers so that we're ready to get in there in November and make sure that that's, we are moving forward in the right direction.
And there's also information on that on the Bro website?
Yep.
Great. Margo Martin, thank you so much for joining me today on The Politics of Living. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Becky.
Next up, The She-Ra Solution, a monthly biography of women past and present, hosted by Kristen Thiel. Its title is inspired by Maria Teresa Hart's article, She-Ra and the Fight Against the Token Girl, published in June of 2016 in The Atlantic. Today's segment is a little different from the usual format of presenting two women and their stories. In honor of the upcoming U.S. elections, Kristen focuses on one interesting story out of Rwanda, about a dangerously powerful president and the woman who dared to challenge him. Here's Kristen Thiel.
For most of us, I bet the most surprising thing about politics in Rwanda is that there are more women in Rwanda's parliament than in any other country's federal lawmaking body. The global average is 23.8% female. Rwanda's parliament is 61.3% female. But after parliament, women hit a ceiling, it seems. 37-year-old Diane Rugara knows this well. She dared to challenge the country's president for the most powerful position in the country, and she's now in prison. She was charged with inciting insurrection and fraud. But according to The Economist, quote, many think Ms. Rugara's real crime is uppityness. Paul Kagame has been president since 2000. In 2015, by pushing through a constitutional amendment, he made it possible for him to stay in power, presuming he wins each election, until 2034. In 2017, he won the most recent presidential election with 98% of the vote. Of this massive win, Kagame was only surprised that it was by only 98%. It could have been 100%, he boasted after the election, according to a CNN report. Knowing that, one may see Kagame as a power-hungry bully. But his story runs along the grayscale. He is credited with not only ending the Rwandan genocide, but bringing the country back from that near destruction. In 1994, he led the armed division of the Rwandan Patriotic Front into the country's capital city of Kigali, leading to the end of the terror that killed at least 800,000 people and forced 2 million others to leave the country. Since then, his social and fiscal ideas have impressed Rwandans and international observers alike. The country is considered one of the least corrupt countries in Africa. Even the World Bank, in 2018, called Rwanda the second best place to do business in sub-Saharan Africa. Kagame's progressive measures even include impressive support of women in leadership. After the genocide, 70% of the country's population was female, and Kagame capitalized on this large pool of strength. He helped usher in a constitutional law that requires at least 30% of all parliamentary seats to be held by women. He also promoted the idea of women in other realms of government. Today, 4 out of 7 Supreme Court justices are women. And the federal level, Ministry of Gender and Family Promotion oversees gender equity in local politics. I wanted to set the stage for this both unique and all too common situation. A country with this much female political leadership, leadership that is encouraged, required by law even, is incredible. But as we know, numbers alone don't tell the whole story. Do women have as much power and respect as they would like? So now, let's get back to the focus of this story. Diane Rugara comes from a wealthy and well-connected family. The family home in Rwanda is described as a modern and luxurious mansion. Rugara spent a lot of her time in the United States and became an accountant. She has a sister, Anne, and a brother, Ariost. Their mother is Adeline. Their father, Assinapol, was a successful tobacco businessman who financed Kagame's political party since the early 1990s. This charmed existence vanished when Assinapol refused to allow the government to seize control of his business in 2015. The Rugara children say the government began harassing their father, and then he was killed in a car crash. The official report says was an accident, but that the Rugara family says was a president-ordered hit. Today, government surveillance vehicles sit outside the Rugara house every day. Following her suspicions about her father's death, Diane Rugara began researching. She found a list, supported by reports by Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, of Rwandan business people, lawyers, and journalists who had been killed in suspicious circumstances or disappeared. Rugara began a campaign to challenge Kagame for the presidency. She earned the support of many young people, including those in the rural areas outside the capital. She was hearing stories of real life for the majority of Rwandans. Her sister told CNN, quote, there was a lot of fear surrounding what she was exposing about the country. Diane would talk about things the ruling party had been trying to hide away from the public eye. Famine, persecution, etc. After Rugara announced her candidacy, nude photos said to be of her spread across the internet. Rugara said they had been faked. Eventually, she was disqualified from running. Election authorities said Rugara had faked signatures on her petition to run. So, she founded the People's Salvation Movement, an activist group working for accountable government. This led to the arrest of her and her mother and her sister. Supporters report being detained by police and told at gunpoint to stop supporting Rugara. Many now live in fear of further retribution and feel forced to move from safe house to safe house. Most have stopped visiting Rugara in her prison cell. They were threatened after every visit. The only female lawmakers quoted in an August 2018 CNN article in Rugara said they supported Kagame and did not want to speak about Rugara. Rugara's sister was eventually released, the tax evasion charges against the family dropped, though the government seized their businesses anyway and auctioned off their assets. Rugara's mother remains held for chatting online with her sister, who lives outside of Rwanda. The chats in which she criticized the government were considered by the government's lawyers to be, quote, dangerous meetings. Rugara's next court date is scheduled for September 24th, after this recording. But no one seems to be holding out hope for that. Her Twitter account, managed by her assistant since her detention, discussed the next massive protest march calling for Rugara's and her mother's release. It's scheduled for September 27th, 3 days after the hearing. I'm your host, Kristen Thiel, and I'll be back next month.
Contributor ML Laurie ponders the moving states of happiness in this month's installment of Let's Stop for a Minute. Here's ML Laurie.
So let's stop for a minute. Let's think about this. In my last reflection, I presented the reality that we are all on a constant search for happiness, which is the basis for all our life decisions. I left you with several questions. Why would someone hold on to a software program, a learned way of thinking that causes them to feel sad, anxious, frustrated, or any emotion that interferes with them feeling happy? Which of your software programs interfere the most with your happiness? And how do we become aware of our software programs? Since these questions center on the idea of being happy, maybe we should think first about what happiness means to us. So stop for a minute and think about this. The dictionary actually defines happy as enjoying or characterized by well-being and contentment, but I think it is really difficult to define our sense or feeling of pleasure, contentment, or whatever other words we might use to explain this joy we feel when we are happy. I think we can all say, though, that happiness is just a sense of feeling good. Do you think it is possible to have a stable sense of happiness, well-being, or contentment, or are the ups and downs of happiness just a part of our human experience? If we look to others, possessions, success, achievements, or other things exterior to ourselves to be happy, can we find a stable sense of happiness? Since we are all on a constant search for happiness, usually outside of ourselves, how can we find this happiness we all seek? So think about this. If our happiness is based on another person, what happens to our happiness if that person goes away, whether they die or choose to go away? What happens to our happiness if the person we look to for happiness becomes angry with us, puts us down, or simply rejects us or some part of us in some way? If our happiness is based on some object, say our new car, some new clothing we really like, or any of the limitless objects we might look to, what happens when the object breaks, falls apart, or goes away somehow? If our happiness is based on success, what happens to our happiness when we are not successful in some way? Our success ends, or possibly someone maligns our success. There are many people who are examples of someone who had all the exterior things we think we need to be happy, yet they weren't. I think Princess Diana is probably the most famous of them. If you think about the answers to these questions, you can begin to see that looking for happiness through people, objects, success, or anything exterior to ourselves will cause our happiness to go up and down depending on our relationship with what we are looking to for happiness. Our happiness is actually dependent on this exterior thing. So we are back to the question of whether a stable sense of happiness that doesn't go up and down, that isn't dependent on exterior things, is possible. What do you think? How can this be achieved? Well, yes, a stable sense of happiness can be achieved, but not through anything that is exterior or outside of ourselves. Bottom line, a stable sense of happiness can only be found by going inside of ourselves. With these ideas in mind, we are then back looking at our software programs, our learned ways of thinking that we operate from. So let's stop for a minute and think about all of this. So which of your software programs interfere the most with your happiness? How do we become aware of our software programs? And why would someone hold on to a software program if it interferes with our happiness? Stop for a minute. Think about it. I'm ML Laurie.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of The Politics of Living. Thanks to our guests and our contributors, Smitha Chidaga, Amber Tachi, Margot Martin, Kristen Thiel, and Emma Lari. And also, thanks to our webpage manager, Denise Kowalczyk. Visit KBOO-FM and search for The Politics of Living, Episode 20, to find links about today's topics and guests. All feedback, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to tpol@kbu.org. That's tpol@kbu.org. If you'd like to be a guest or a contributor on the Politics of Living show, please email tpol@kboo.org. We're going to end the show today with a song by Michelle Malone entitled Other Girls. Thanks for listening to The Politics of Living. I'm Vicki Mazzone.
I wish I were like the other girls. A simple life in a simple world. Marriage, children, picket fence. Speak softly and act demure, but I'm not like the other girls. Other girls wish they were like me. Carefree, rockstar, royalty. Jet set, penthouse, hot chauffeur. Other girl. Other girls smile, get what they want. No speeding tickets for a box, I'm blonde. No, you're a redhead built like the atom bomb. Got a jiggle and a walk and a twinkle and a ride. Yeah, the other girls make me feel like a just a different color. Oh, there's nothing simple in the modern world. And every woman is the other girl, other girl. Every woman is the other girl. Everywhere around the world, everyone is the other girl. Every woman.
Girl. Thank you for spending your morning with us at KBOO. Coming up next is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And then at 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, The Bike Show brings you news and views of cycling in Oregon and beyond. And all these programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member of KBOO, You know what to do. Go to kboo.fm and click donate. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7, listener-supported radio for Portland and beyond. And we have a little bit of time before Eric Cascadia starts, so I'm going to play a song by Andrew Bird called Down Under the Hyperion Bridge. It's part of his series where he takes natural soundscapes, like the LA River in this case, and just plays violin by himself, and usually he's barefoot. And so this is this, it's almost a self-released album that he does. So we're going to play that as we're waiting for Eric Cascadia to arrive, and we'll stay tuned for more morning news and commentary on KBOO.